It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. In the 2010 census, 4.2 million Americans identified as belonging to more than one race, and that number is projected to rise. Our guest explains how high-profile biracial individuals like President Barack Obama and Duchess of Sussex Meghan Markle are symbolic of societal changes. We also discuss how race and identity intersect, how traditional views of race reinforce structural racism, and how biracial and multi-ethnic identities may help evolve culture. Are you biracial or multi-ethnic? How has that impacted your experience of life? Share your story with us. Are you in a biracial or multi-ethnic family? What conversations do you have around identity? How do you think society can embrace our changing demographic? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Kimberly Barrett is the Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion at Lawrence University. She also writes columns for the Appleton Post Crescent. Kimberly, welcome to the Morning Show.
Thank you, John. Glad to be here.
You say that race is a social construction. It might seem obvious to some. Explain that to us.
Well, many times we think about race as being something biological, you know, the color of your skin or the shape of features, facial features. But in fact, race, the way that we understand it today, really came into being in the 16, 1700s when a number of different groups came together in North America. And around that, we had this issue of slavery and also the separation of people from their lands, indigenous peoples from their lands. And in order to justify that, for the first time in human history, we began to think about whether or not these groups of people who look different might be more or less human. And so we began to institutionalize this issue of white supremacy to justify at a time in the world when we were really looking at this idea of universal human rights and all men, and at that time it was men being created equal. How could we justify disenfranchising, indigenous people, people from Africa who were slaves? And so we began to speculate about whether or not there were humans who were less human than others. And so in order to justify the current economic and social order, we began to talk about race as if it was something that was, this very definite, impermeable category.
Well, and not to spend too much time on this aspect, but I mean, there was quite a bit of effort placed in trying to find some sort of science that would back up those racial theories, wasn't there?
There was. There was eugenics and a number of frenetics and a number of things that people used to try and look at these very surface, superficial differences and try to connect them to inequities that we were beginning to see in terms of people's achievements and, well-being. And so, there was a huge amount of sort of pseudoscience that evolved around this and really, unfortunately served as the basis for some of the Nazi philosophies and experiments.
So race is a social construct. Let's shift then to identity. How do you define identity?
Well, identity is really how you, who you say you are and how the world sees you. It's really an interaction between, how we see ourselves, some things that maybe sort of we're predisposed to, and then how the world sees us. And many times we've thought about identity throughout history as being something that, again, is something that's permanent. But what we're beginning to learn is that identity shifts throughout our lifetimes. What is important to how we see ourselves and how we see the world shifts. And that's the same in terms of our ethnicity and this thing we call race. And one of the important things that people who are biracial or multi-ethnic sort of illustrate for us is, you know, quite clearly how these things change.
And how does, well, race becomes an essential component then of the identity that we choose for ourselves? Is that how that works?
Well, I think society really has made this a part of who we are. While I say that race is an illusion, I would even go as far to say it's a myth that we sort of permeate every day, that we perpetrate every day with terrible consequences. I would say that culture has created this identity that has a lot of consequences for us. And instead of looking at the structural barriers and conditions that create certain outcomes, you know, like difficulty getting financing for a house and thus less, you know, wealth, what we've done is we've ascribed that to these categories called race. And so while I'm saying race is an illusion, racism is very real.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about white racial identity. How does that develop?
Well, I think for all of us, when we talk about racial identity, there's a point at which this is learned. And so there's a point at which you're not aware of this thing called race until you encounter a situation where you see that you are treated differently because of this skin color, right? And so for white people, often what happens is you have some encounter with an oppressed group or marginalized group, and you begin to realize your power. And so when you talk about white racial identity development, ideally what happens is you go from sort of being unaware of this thing called whiteness to developing a consciousness of whiteness, and then understanding sort of an anti-racist way of being related to this understanding, so that you become an ally and a partner in making social change that can lift everyone's boat and decrease racism in society. So it's really a process of enlightenment in its best form. Like all development, we don't all make it to sort of the most sophisticated, highest levels, but you know, we can either choose to, once we become aware of these issues, we can choose to become allies, learn more, educate ourselves, and develop an anti-racist identity.
Compare that then to how black racial identity develops.
Well, again, you start out with sort of this not being aware of this thing called race, because it is something that is learned. And what we do, and usually it happens earlier in life, because if you're privileged, part of your privilege is you don't have to think about this thing called race. But if you're a person of color, particularly an African American in the United States, you, again, have this encounter with you know, these inequities related to race, and you realize that, oh, I'm different. You know, I am not this, you know, privileged other, this person that you might call white, and I can't be that. And so many people at that point really begin to immerse themselves in understanding African-American culture, black culture, and really sort of immersing themselves in that, to understand it and be able to, at some point, hopefully, again, just as in white development, develop a consciousness that would allow them to ally with others to work towards social justice. And so, but, you know, it can result in people, you know, really sort of being in this fight mode for a lot of their lives, just understanding how do I deal with this constant, you know, stress, pressure, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But hopefully in both cases, we get to a point where we can work through these issues, feel good about who we are, no matter what our identities might be, no matter what our ethnic backgrounds might be. And then from a point of strength and self-esteem, work together for social justice.
And so we're all on a continuum of some sort, in a way, I guess, would be one way to look at it.
Yeah, I think coming from a point of just totally not being aware of issues of identity to being able to understand who we are, feel good about that, both the good and the bad of the structural inequities that groups we belong to have been part of, and then learn how we can make a difference. What the problem is when we get defensive and become really sort of caught up in this, what I would call, to use a slang term, sort of tribalism, where we see it, we don't see our human, our, you know, common humanity.
Yeah, and so much of that is fear-based. What is it that we're afraid of?
Well, I think we're afraid of a couple of things. One is that somehow we're not being that good girl or good boy or good person that, you know, we think we should be. And so when we come to understand the history of injustice related to various groups in our society, we want to say that we're not part of that, that this is not me. But to realize that whether it's you or not, once you become aware of it, you can make a difference. I think that's what people should focus on. It's fear of losing status. We talk about power differentials. It's fear of being seen as immoral, doing the wrong thing. And I think it's fear of change. You know, culture evolves and changes, and the unknown causes a lot of fear.
And change can be messy at times. We're going to continue our conversation with Kimberly Barrett, Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion at Lawrence University. She also writes columns for the Appleton Post-Crescent. Are you biracial or multi-ethnic? How's that impacted your experience? Share your story with us at 800-642-1234. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. In the 2010 census, 4.2 million Americans identified as belonging to more than one race, and that number is going to go up. We're discussing how race and identity intersect, how traditional views of race reinforce structural racism, and how biracial and multi-ethnic identities may help evolve culture. What do you think about all of this? Are you biracial or multi-ethnic? How's that impacted your experience? Share your story with us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Kimberly Barrett is the Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion at Lawrence University. She also writes columns for the Appleton Post-Crescent. Kimberly, our culture has evolved into this rigid structure based on skin color, black, white, brown, whatever, but it's based on that. Talk to us about how identity development can be a struggle then, particularly for biracial or multi-ethnic people.
You know, I think historically we have assumed that it was a struggle. I think what I found as the mother of a biracial, multi-ethnic person, and also in looking at the research, is that it can actually be beneficial in terms of self-esteem and understanding the complexity of identity early on. I know that being aware of the racism in society, my husband and I took quite a intentional effort to make sure that early on, our son understood all aspects of his identity. My husband, although he identifies as white, is a member of a Native American tribe, a nation on the West Coast, and we have always shared information with him about that. We did Kwanzaa, so he understood, you know, some of the traditions of the African diaspora, and of course, made him aware of other aspects of his ethnic identity early on. And so what takes some of us, you know, many years, even into adulthood, to understand in terms of the multidimensional nature of identity, I think he and some other biracial individuals understand that much sooner. On the other hand, because society is not used to looking at that complexity, it can be difficult to figure out sometimes where do you belong. Of course, we hope that people understand that they belong in all of those groups, and again, can sort of understand the benefits of this broad, beloved community. That Martin Luther King Jr. used to talk about, that is inclusive, and where we sort of understand our sort of shared humanity.
Let's talk a little bit about demographics. We know that the number of biracial or multi-ethnic Americans are going up. That number, that's a fact. The number is increasing. What do we expect our population to look like in a few generations?
Well, I think that in a few generations, it'll be clear that, the fact is that we are one species. There is only one group of Homo sapiens on the earth today. And so I think that will become clear as we see the diversity within family groups, diversities within communities. Unfortunately, since the 80s in the United States, we've begun to sort of resegregate around race and socioeconomic status. But I think that with this sort of evolution of families that are multicultural, it'll become very clear and visible, this illusion of race. And I think it will really help us see the structural inequities that have resulted in the differences that we attribute to race.
President Barack Obama famously said, "I am the son of a black man from Kenya and a white woman from Kansas. I have brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, uncles, and cousins of every race and every hue scattered across three continents. And for as long as I live, I will never forget that in no other country on earth is my story even possible." Kimberly, how does President Obama's experience reflect that of biracial Americans?
Well, I think that he is kind of the epitome of somebody who is biracial and identifies as African American. And so I think what he said it better than I certainly could. In the U.S., we are probably the most diverse nation in terms of ethnic groups and just backgrounds, different backgrounds that people have who have come together to live here. And so I think he's a wonderful example of, the positive impact that owning this identity can have. I think there are other people who are biracial who will identify in other ways. Meghan Markle, she is someone who identifies as biracial. She doesn't necessarily identify as African-American, but biracial. And so there are a number of people, depending on their experiences, where they come from, who identify differently with the same, parental background in terms of what we might call one black and one white parent may identify differently. And again, I think this is just an example of the diversity that we have in the United States, and the possibilities for how people choose to identify that really sort of illustrates sort of this illusion of race.
We had a caller, Paula, in Madison, who couldn't stay with us, but her story is that she is Mexican but has light skin, and people don't believe her when she tells them that she's Mexican. She feels a lot of struggle because she doesn't feel like she's white, but she doesn't feel like she's Mexican either. Is Paula's story one that's common among people who are multi-ethnic or biracial?
It is, particularly people who you might consider are white assumed, and that some people, years ago might call white passing. Because of the, hardships, oppression, and, the flip side of that, the privileges that people with lighter skin have, there's often some feelings of, do I fit in? Do I belong? But I think looking at, this is who I am. This is what I look like. Yes, I may have some privileges associated with that, given the structures that exist in a society currently, but I also have this heritage. I think owning it all is the key. And for all of us, understanding that, in fact, most people in the United States are multi-ethnic. And if we could understand that and maybe get beyond these, dichotomies of black and white, That would help people like our caller understand that they fit wherever they choose to fit.
You know, and there's the crux of it. I mean, you write that thinking of society in terms of black and white reinforces structures of white supremacy, black suppression that build much of the world. Black and white are the colors of racism. How can we evolve past that mindset?
Well, I think first we have to understand what you began the interview with, this idea that race is a social construction. It is something that we created to support a certain economic and social order. And as that changes, which it is obviously changing today, you know, we need to find a new way of thinking about and describing who we are. For example, you know, I grew up in the South and just took for granted that I was black. And today I'm very careful to describe myself as African American because that's my ethnic heritage. That's my ethnic background. And it really does influence who I see myself as being and the way I experience the world and how other people see me. And so I'm very, very clear about choosing to call myself African American as my ethnicity.
And I guess it's going to be time, it's going to be education, and some patience, I suppose, is involved. But we've had a while to fix this, and we've got a ways to go. Thank you, Kimberly Barrett, for sharing this moment with us this morning.
Thank you.
Kimberly Barrett is the Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion at Lawrence University. She also writes columns for the Appleton Post-Crescent. I mentioned patience a moment ago. We're going to talk about patience next hour as the morning show continues. We hope you'll stay with us. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.